Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome. So glad to be here again with my friends, my folks, my audience, to refounding America and reclaiming ourselves, the two things we must do. And we better get it done by the coming 2024, or America is sliding into an abyss. You're listening on the radio, you're listening to PRN.live. The show comes from Brighteon TV. I'm Dr. Peter Breggin. I'm a psychiatrist. And I have a guest today, Sasha Latipova, who is perhaps going to be the most revelatory interview I've had in a long time. We've all been focusing on everything that's going on in the bureaucracy, but not enough on the Department of Defense. And more, thanks to her research, and she'll mention other researchers to you, we're getting focused on the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense. Be back soon. Well, welcome back, my wonderful audience. You're looking at Peter Breggin and Sasha Latipova. And for those of us who are on the radio, I'll spell her last name for you because you're going to want to keep track of this person. And her last name is spelled Latipova. This woman has enormous experience in the research and development field. She has worked for dozens of very big names in the field. And she did so eventually as a director of research and development, and eventually she has retired. She has been researching since the beginning, I believe. Maybe she'll tell you a little bit about the story. But she has really hit on a vein of gold in understanding what has been happening to us. Many people have been saying on and off, well, this is not a quote vaccine. What do we? Well, maybe it's a weapon. It's a weapon. It's a weapon. Well, folks, it actually is a weapon. And that's what we're going to be learning about today. The roots of the entire COVID operation in America coming through to a great extent the Department of Defense. It doesn't do away with the global predators. We write about it in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. It's the conduit. And this is going to be really interesting to hear about. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just start talking about where you want to go with this whole new concept, or you more of your background, either one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so my background is I was in clinical trials. I worked as a contractor for many pharmaceutical companies, including Pfizer, and in performance of clinical trials, because pharmaceutical companies don't really do anything themselves. And they outsource all the work to contractors like myself. And, you know, there are many companies, large and small, doing this work. And so I was familiar with the regulatory requirements for pharmaceuticals, especially with respect to safety and how safety is supposed to be tested, because that was a big part of my work. And, you know, so when I heard of these mRNA technologies being pushed as potential vaccines for COVID, I became very concerned because I knew about this class of medicine. Although, you know, I came across it in 2009 or so, and I saw it being developed by several smaller companies. They subsequently went out of business. I looked into the technology itself. I realized it was very dangerous, very risky, as far as, you know, my knowledge of different pharmaceuticals, pharmaceutical products and different classes. And, you know, so I read literature. I saw that they were very risky. There were a lot of problems. I thought they would never be solved because they were just, you know, very, very severe. With both, you know, the lack of therapeutic window, what we call therapeutic window, meaning that space between underdosing and overdosing. So you want to give a dose of medicine that produces desired outcome, and then you wanted this dose to be low enough so you don't produce undesired problems, right? The safety issues. And for these products, it was notorious that they didn't have that window at all. So you would either have no effect or you would immediately start killing and injuring people. And that happened, actually. There were severe injuries. I believe there were deaths, although they're kind of being covered up in the subsequent reports, in a phase one trial in the UK of this particular class of medicine. And so since then, I have not heard anything about them. And I thought, well, they probably just abandoned that whole area because, you know, as I said, you know, it was just very risky. But then, you know, comes 2020 and we hear, oh, you know, these are going to be vaccines. So that was very shocking. That was very shocking. I was like, that thing, there's no way they overcame those problems. And they didn't. None of those problems were overcome. What they did, though, is rename the class. So instead of gene therapies, now they're called vaccines. But the renaming of the technology did nothing to remove those risks. The risks are still there. The problems are still there. And now, of course, we have a lot of empirical data that tells us, yes, it's true. The hundreds of thousands of people have been killed, millions injured worldwide, including children. You know, the miscarriages, the birth defects, the potential sterility, menstrual abnormalities in women, heart attacks in children. You know, so we have all these, the variety of, you know, neurological injury and so many problems with these products very clearly documented. There's no question. Anybody who honestly wants to find the truth, they can see it right away. And so, you know, that's that kind of, you know, it's a longer way of saying, you know, how I started looking into them, because I knew that mRNA had problems, and hearing the government telling me that, oh, we've solved all those problems, oh, by the way, in a weekend we developed this product, you know, that didn't allay any of my concerns. In fact, you know, that's how I became extremely suspicious of them. So that's kind of how I started looking into the data. And I originally looked into VAERS data, the CDC Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. My first analysis was to look at the variability of adverse events and deaths by batch number. So that was, you know, somewhere in the middle of 2021, I started doing the analysis. Was already a lot of data accumulated in VAERS by then. And what I saw right away was that these products were actually not produced to what we call good manufacturing practices, because the variability was gigantic. So when you know, if you think about well-produced pharmaceutical, you know, if you go and buy aspirin or in the pharmacy, right? So you expect every pill in that bottle to perform the same. And then you expect every bottle of the, you know, aspirin that you're buying to have the same performance as the next one, right? That's what the pharmaceutical process is all about. That's why we have FDA regulators. They regulate the process. They make sure that the process is so reliable, so tightly controlled, the ingredients are so pure, and we don't have any, you know, impurities and contaminants. And if we do have them, we find them quickly and we flag it and we remove it from the process, or we stop the production line. There's so many, you know, safeguards that have been developed over the years so that consumers can be protected, and consumers and healthcare providers can both trust that, you know, vial of medicine or bottle of pills that they take off the shelf, because they have no ability to tell whether that's a reliable, safe medicine, the same as they've used before, or is it something completely different and poisonous? So people kind of can't wrap their heads around this, but if you do not have that assurance, if you do not have the process that produces time after time after time in millions of doses the same exact thing as you have been given before, you cannot possibly trust any of it, any, you know. So that's what I found. I found that instead of this being, you know, like a very predictable, very tightly controlled process with the same, with the batches producing about the same effect, batch after batch after batch, they were varying 1,000% and more from batch to batch. And so that was a huge finding. I published it. I mean, I'm nobody, so I'm not even on social media, really. I write on Substack now, but that's just, you know, I started it a couple of months ago. At that time, I didn't have any social media presence, and I didn't want to go even on YouTube or even try there, because I knew it was going to be deleted immediately, and why should I support them? So I just started making PowerPoint presentations and putting them on BitChute, really. And I also had Telegram Messenger, and I was collaborating with this guy from the UK. His name is Craig Parody Cooper. Also, he's also, you know, pretty much nobody. He was a pharmacy student. He had to leave because of the vaccine requirement. He had some software development skills. And so we kind of partnered up, and he put up a website, which is very popular now. It's called How Bad Is My Batch? Or howbad.info. And so I provided a bunch of my data for that site. He loaded his, so that's the website where you can go. If you don't have skills, you know, researching VAERS yourself, you can go to that website and type in the batch number. And the data is unfortunately only for the US, because that's the only place where we have batch numbers. Mm-hmm. And so you can type the batch number of the vaccine, and you can see for yourself how many adverse events and deaths it generated, and you can also compare to other batch numbers, and you will see the same finding I'm telling you about. You will see some lots will have 2 to 3 adverse events, and some lots will have thousands and hundreds of deaths.
What do you make of the difference between a 2 to 3 deaths and the hundreds of deaths batch with you? Any idea what's going on? Has anybody peeked into these actual containers?
Well, so the vials themselves are property of the Department of Defense. People don't realize this. But on the CDC website, you have they've disclosed terms of the contract with the vaccination centers. And that's one of the terms. It explains that these vials are property of the US government, but they're actually property of the Department of Defense, because Department of Defense orders them from the pharmas and buys them and distributes them. So they own it from the point when it comes out of the factory to the point when it's injected into the person. And that's another huge flag and essentially a violation of our consumer protection rights, because mm-hmm. we have a licensed pharmacy distribution network for a reason. They're also highly regulated. So the pharmaceutical manufacturers are regulated. Pharmaceutical distributors are also highly regulated and licensed. And for the reason that they, if there is anything, so they take ownership or possession of the product, they're supposed to maintain it and trace it. And if there are any reports or any issues, then you can retrace them through the distribution network and, for example, remove vials from the shelf or remove a batch from the shelf. But also, yes, yeah, so Department of Defense owns these things. And so they do not allow any third-party testing, which is another odd thing. I worked in the pharma and medical device industry. We constantly buy competitors' products that are approved. Once the product is approved and in the licensed distribution chain, well, you can order it from a distributor. And you can buy competitors' products and you can do testing and comparator studies with your own products. And everybody does it, obviously, because you want to know how you perform against others. Now, in this case, it's not allowed. This is the property of US government. And if you read that contract with vaccinators, you will see that they're saying, oh, if you do anything like this, don't dare, because we will accuse you of a theft of federal property. Even the vaccine cards, the stupid cards from the CDC, the paper cards, they're also property of the US government. You know, you're not allowed to divert them either. So
it's unbelievable.
So that's how, that's in the US. Outside of the US, it's handled a little bit differently. But nevertheless, despite all of this, there are many, many people, I know some of them, who have done the third-party testing, the independent testing of these products. And it's also, it's very difficult because you have to have access to very sophisticated equipment. Most of the people that I know just do simple microscopy, you know, just looking at these things under microscope in different conditions. And that already reveals a lot of bizarre things. But, you know, so in general, I'm aware of over 20 or 30 experiments looking at different vials all over the world, all continents, you know, maybe 16 or 17 countries, something like that. And there's a paper on that has been published in a peer-reviewed journal discussing the findings. And the findings just show that nothing in those vials, in fact, conforms to the labels of the manufacturers. Well, maybe some things, but not important ones. So maybe there is salt and sugar, as they're saying, but the important things like mRNA, for example, does not conform. When we find it, it's not always happens, but when we find it, it has never yet conformed to the specified sequence of the manufacturer. It's anything under the sun, any type of fragments of RNA, huge impurities of DNA that's not supposed to be there, E. coli, the genes for antibiotic resistance, which come from the raw materials. That's how the DNA matrix is made, by using those genes as markers. So they're injecting people with all sorts of broken genetic sequences, RNA and DNA, double-stranded, single-stranded, including impurities, including genes for antibiotic resistance. And then we were wondering how, you know, antibiotic resistance is spreading. Well, that's how. You know, so that's the genetic components. And then there are a whole bunch of other types of impurities that were found, which are also very concerning, such as metals, heavy metals, toxic metals, cobalt, mercury, lead, titanium, antimony, thulium, very rare materials also. Nobody knows why they're there. You know, so we're finding metals and we're finding objects. So they're so large, you can call them objects. So they're visible under both electron and standard optical microscope. So that's not a nanoscale. There are huge chunks of stuff. Sometimes it's metal, sometimes it's something else. We don't know exactly. There are very characteristic ribbons that people find, ribbons and fibers and, you know, these kind of long, and sometimes they self-assemble. So the material is taken from freezing and then it sits for a while and then you see these things develop, especially if you speed up, if you video and then speed it up, it's very, very visible. So all of that tells us there is, first of all, very sloppy process. So the process is not controlled because the variety is just astonishing. And then we have a process that's producing these huge things that are not supposed to be in injectables and also producing a lot of contaminations of various sorts. We don't know what they are and from where they're coming from and why. And so far, there's been no response to any of the of these publications. And, you know, there's a lot of materials online and I have a big collection. I know people who are doing it currently. They send us video and images and, you know, we just we would keep publishing, but nobody has ever responded to this because pharma companies, as I said, well, while they're pretending it's a crime to divert these things, right, and look at them, they also, once we divert and look at them, they also immediately disown it. They're like, oh, nothing to see, it's not ours. And nobody has ever been prosecuted for diversion because of this, because they know they will lose bigly. Okay, if this comes out as a official, you know, oh, you took my vial, or was it, this was your vial, right?
Folks, this is so out of anything I've I ever saw or have seen in charges against drug companies. And it's clearly here, the Department of Defense is very, very key in it. Now, I heard that they also are working with HHS, with the,
yeah.
Can you say a few things about that?
Well, they're essentially, they're kind of merged with HHS under the current legal structure of public health emergency. So the types of laws that were invoked, and I mean, we can cover it in the next segment, but the laws that were invoked and legal structures that were invoked in this so-called pandemic response, they really have very little to do with health. And they have a lot to do with war. So under Stafford Act, that was invoked first time to declare this sort of pandemic response measure, all of the HHS and DOD are kind of merged as far as executive branch. And then the Defense Production Act is also invoked to fund and order these injections. And so while it was advertised that Operation Warp Speed is a sort of collaborative work between HHS and DOD, in fact, how they organize themselves is the National Security Council is in charge of COVID policy overall. And National Security Council has really, again, nothing to do with health. They don't have public health representatives on this council. It has to do with advisory body for the United States President for foreign policy. And regular attendees are defense heads and intelligence heads. So everyone is typically involved in some sort of war response planning, prevention or whatever. I mean, but they deal with mostly military affairs, foreign policy, and things of the national security. So why are we told that this is a health event when the government organizes itself and invokes the legal structures that are typically would be typical of a wartime effort? And so that's question number one. Then Operation Warp Speed is headed by the Department of Defense. It's not like a collaboration.
Wow. You have so much to say. By the way, folks, I'm taking notes in case you're wondering why I'm bobbing around. I almost never take notes in these things. And I've actually heard you speak before, and I have some notes from that time. But integrating all that you're saying requires a lot of thinking. It's a tremendous amount of data. Now, you just said something, in fact, it just escaped me as I was explaining why I was taking notes. What part was organized under the Department of Defense? There was a special thing you just said a minute ago.
So the Operation Warp Speed, but also the COVID response was headed by National Security Council, which is essentially defense and intelligence together. So that's you know, why would defense and intelligence heads deal with what we're told a public health event in the United States, or you know, even internationally?
Wow, I mean, we're over for right now. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes, folks. Continue with the really important information. Well, I'm back with Sasha Latapova. This is a stunning discussion. And off camera, we were talking about briefly about what they're trying to do. And I think I'd like to just go right with what you were saying, because it fits so much with what a lot of those of us who are looking hard are thinking about. So the whole idea of what I asked was a small question. I said, why are they doing this? Why are they doing
it? It's not a small question. It's a big question.
So talk about that, would you, a little bit, your views on that?
Yeah, well, we were talking that the you know, if you look ultimately at the drivers of all of this, the cabal behind the cabal. I mean, we know direct involvement of our Department of Defense, but people in and that's documented, and I talk about it all the time, that you know the Department of Defense is in charge of execution of this, but obviously they have somebody behind them, who owns them, who captured them. Or by them, I mean the treasonous leadership at the DoD, treasonous to the United States, that's doing this. And the perpetrators behind them, I think, is the central banks and Bank of International Settlements, which is in Basel. And I think it has to do with the sovereign debt crisis, that you know, they needed this kind of a scenario, which was long pre-planned. We have a lot of evidence of pre-planning. And the scenario was long pre-planned. It was practiced many times. All the kinks were worked out, especially legal protections that we had. They eliminated those very carefully and methodically through amendments to a lot of laws in the United States. And they need to do it because they think that if they crash it first, then they will be on top of the collapsed pile. You know, they know that the debt is unsustainable, that it will come to an end, and they want to drive the collapse themselves in order to stay in charge. And they don't care really about the outcome. Somebody said very well, they said, these are the kinds of people who will rather rule over ashes than not rule at all. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're collapsing the world. It's gotten out of control. I don't think they're reaching the targets that they set out to reach. And so it's already in process, but the result is not inevitable, and it's up to us to do something about it and to counteract it. And the more, by the way, the more aware we are of what's going on, and the more we tell others and explain to others what's going on, the less likely they succeed at all, these perpetrators, because they're only successful based on blind obedience and fear and compliance with everyone, and they always operate in secrecy. They cannot really operate in the light. So if we bring them to the light, it's a disinfectant. We get rid of them. So that's kind of the bigger picture. Why they're doing it? Who is doing it? Well, so the driver is the central bank, and the executor is for the U.S. and many countries in the world, it's the Department of Defense.
Have you been talking with Catherine Austin Fitz about these ideas?
Yes. I talked to her. She's a great lady. She's super smart. I read her reports. Solari. They published some of my articles as well.
I think I've seen you. That's another place that I've seen your thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, she talks quite a bit about it. I think she's correct. Also, Mark Skidmore, his reports and publications, and another person, John Titus, that publishes there. I mean, they're excellent. They know much more than I do. I know a little bit about finance. I have an MBA degree. I understand, finance markets and things like that. But I never looked as deeply as they did, because that's a whole other area of fraud, the financial fraud that the government has perpetrated on us.
I have no doubt that that basic model works. I'm not sure yet in my own mind how much is churned out by the bankers themselves, how much are the bankers working with other people. It's amazing if you start to look into the banking industry and our Fed, which is a central bank, and then there's the central bank of all the central banks, and that's the BIS, B-I-S-S or B-I-S?
Yeah, B-I-S.
And to give you an idea, folks, just someplace my mind, own mind is going, when you gave that quote, as I'd rather rule over ashes than rule, I'd rather rule over nothing, really. I'd rather rule over ashes.
Yeah, that's not rule at all.
Not rule. It actually goes right to one of the images that I've always puzzled over and thought about, not talked much about, which is Hitler, you know, at the very end, sitting in his castle, while the German people are being absolutely pulverized. The troops, the U.S. troops, are in Berlin already. Mm-hmm. Bombings are killing people. Hitler doesn't let anybody near him who's wants to end the war. There was a coup and he had them all killed. And I was always been thinking how this man would rather rule over the death of his people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add to it from this, whoever the other quote is from, then not rule at all. Because mm-hmm. I was so aware that, I mean, he wanted to rule while they all died. And the people who run empires, folks, I've been studying this a lot since COVID-19 and the global predators, they love death.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of you heard me talking about this lately, but I was just talking this morning about how the first great empire of China back in 2015 BC, half of the empire died in the process of bringing this empire down upon the kingdoms, and Mao and Hitler and Stalin. I mean, they probably got 200 million deaths among them,
mm-hmm.
far greater than the war itself in the numbers of casualties. And these are civilians. I'm not talking about killing the people who are fighting in a war, just the slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most dismaying things for me that may be to come to the same position you have come to without your knowledge about the DOD. I mean, I knew they were involved, but I had no idea how much until I started seeing your work. Was once the vaccines were put out, within days they had thousands of deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Now, usually, no, always, they would just stop a vaccine if you had a dozen deaths. They'd just stop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the batches, when you talked about, if you find a couple of bad batches, you stop the whole process. You don't let it get out of hand. And I realized that this is a complete reversal. It's as if they are wanting to kill as many people as possible, mm-hmm. but I didn't want to believe that. And then, you know, the general conversation said, well, they rushed it out too fast. They didn't know how dangerous it was because they didn't do enough animal studies. But I've been looking at animal studies for quite a while for our book, for COVID-19, The Global Predators. And the animal studies were there. In fact, there were so many there that in 2020, while the rollout is occurring, there are scientific articles saying, one funded by Fauci, saying, don't try this on humans. We haven't solved the problems involved in these vaccines. And the problems were many, many, but one of the problems was that if you got the vaccine and then you got COVID, you might get a worse COVID and die because that was happening to animals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you gave enough, it was sort of what you were talking about, if you gave enough vaccine, and these were probably better vaccines because they were developing them in labs and I'm sure trying to keep some better organization than the DOD has wanted. And they would find that if you gave enough vaccine to, you know, to destroy the incoming bugs, the incoming SARS-CoV-2, you would give these terrible inflammatory reactions and all kinds of other things. But you might be able to stop a lot of the COVID. But as the vaccine weakened and you were in this land where you had, on the one hand, it's not a vaccine, of course, you had the antibody reactions that were built up by the fake vaccine, and then you came in, you got the disease, you got more antibody reactions, and animals would die from that. So it was like all over the place that these terrible things were going on. And it made me realize that they had to know what they were doing. Fauci even funded one of these studies. They wanted to kill people. I didn't want to think it. But if you look at history, that's empire buildings. They like to kill people along the way.
Yes, it is intentional. It's absolutely intentional. So when you look at both things, we can come back to the empire as well. But if you look at the class, the mRNA class, the regulators knew a lot about it. It was very well documented. It wasn't development since late 90s, at least. And there were regulatory guidances, the documents which FDA issues for the industry, where they describe, you know, how to develop certain things and what the industry needs to comply with and how to, you know, design clinical trials and what risks to anticipate. So for this whole category of mRNA products and gene therapies, there's a whole bunch of guidances published over time, and they are very detailed. And the last one before COVID was in 2015. And that one described a whole bunch of risks. It cited papers, including the vaccine, the disease enhancement, the deaths, the uncontrollable expression of antigens and proteins, cardiovascular issues, ocular issues, cancer cause, you know, the potential to cause cancer, all sorts of things. If you read it, they knew all this. They knew all this. They knew what to expect. Yet in 2020, by simply renaming it into vaccines, they said, oh, none of this applies anymore. Now we go by the 2005 WHO guidance for vaccines, which, that guidance was developed by, surprise, surprise, Marion Gruber, who then later on in 2020 signed off on pharma's saying that, oh, we should use that guidance from 2005 by WHO to assess our safety. So this is just a complete circular exercise here, where Marion Gruber designs fake guidance for WHO, then goes, works for FDA, then signs off on the pharma company saying that that's proper for gene therapies now. And then, of course, later she resigned and went to a cushy job funded by some globalist organization. That's how they always do it. So, of course, they had complete full knowledge, both the pharmaceutical companies and the FDA, of what havoc this will cause in people when injected. And then they, with this full knowledge, they went ahead, authorized the development, invoked a whole bunch of laws that remove all the liability through Cures and PrEP Act, make it a military countermeasure. So they're using they're ordering military countermeasures under public health emergency through other transaction authority mechanism of contracting. This makes it completely kind of bulletproof, no pun intended, where DoD takes it completely out of the pharmaceutical regulated space. Yeah. So this is unregulated, not pharmaceutical, no liability. Then they go and lie to the public that, oh, we have a health event and we're going to make this a pharmaceutical. Then the public is scared by the media into frenzy. They all run and get themselves injected multiple times, and a bunch of them die, and millions are injured and disabled, and we have pilots that cannot fly, and we have children that are having heart attacks. So yeah, it is intentional. Yes, it is a death cult being unrolled on us. And when people say in shock, well, but why would my government do it to you? I also point out to totalitarian governments that we're in the process of the globalists trying to establish a totalitarian government. Mass killings and genocides are a common feature of every totalitarian government out there that you can think of. And you are correct. There's about 200 million people who have been murdered by various types of communists or fascists or so forth, but it's essentially the same type of a deal. It's a totalitarian regime that wants to come in and establish themselves. And the only way they can do it is through mass terror, impoverishing people, terrorizing, you know, killing a whole bunch of people and then terrorizing the rest to such a degree that they will comply with anything. So we're in the process of that. That's what they're doing. They're using this pretend public health event to establish this.
You're amazing. It's amazing what you're saying. The clarity is amazing. I'm actually sort of at a loss for words, just mulling on it. It's entirely consistent with everything I've come to agree on, to believe, me and Ginger. Mm-hmm. You're just giving us a whole new mechanism that makes it more real, because I've been studying in the last few months empires, because I realized we were seeing an empire unfold. Mm-hmm. And that this was operating like a weapon of an empire with clear intentions to terrify, dominate, control, but for mm-hmm. the first time in history on a global level, but by the exact same principles as all empires, totalitarian states have always operated. And now you come along and you say, yes, it's all that's true, Dr. Brangen. And now the final key is that it's being done through the Department of Offense, as I call it, right. In my slip of the tongue.
I got to remember that. I'm going to call them that.
A famous slip by a famous person. So, I mean, that's it. I mean, I believe this is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. We've been talking, a lot of us, about what's the solution. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the most immediate thing, and we always have to look at this, is to retake our country. We must re-own our country. Maybe if God is not only on our side, but, you know, carrying a flag beside us in battle, maybe we can do it without a war. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can do it by just being real good democratic people, obeying the Bill of Rights, not just a democracy, a constitutional democracy, getting out in the streets, voting, supervising the voting, support those people who are trying to tell you that the voting is fudged. I mean, you got to just accept that now, folks. It's part of the totalitarian takeover. Really rally and inform each other. Stop being so scared you can't go outside because you don't know whether you'll be locked up like the January 6th people or you'll get COVID or whatever. Forget it all and, you know, fight for America.
Stop wearing masks.
Yeah.
And ignore those who tell you to. You know, I go to the doctor's office, I don't wear a mask. And they tell me, I'm like, okay. You know, I'm nice, but I'm not going to do it. And just don't do it. Just
now,
say
how
no.
Have you fared? We have 3 minutes. Do you want to talk at all about what you've been up against, either spiritually? I mean, I found it mm-hmm. spiritually overwhelming at times to write the COVID, you know, to write our book. And and then, of course, there have been some really violent attacks now, being mm-hmm. sued for $25 million by a supposed member of the freedom community.
I mean, for me, this has been, it's been, you know, hard spiritually, yes, but I also, it's been a time of big growth, I think, and understanding and getting clarity on things. And once you see it, it's not actually scary. I want people to understand that it's maybe hard when you're on the other side and you're terrified. But once you really, truly see it for what it is, it's not scary at all. It's disgusting. But you can totally get through it, and you can get better, and you can understand more, and you can also be able to heal, I would say. It's very difficult to tell people that we cannot trust our health authorities, for example. You cannot trust your doctor. You cannot even trust, you know, common medications now, because our supply of, you know, of these things are dwindling and is completely compromised. But you can, I don't know how to find the good words for this, but you can become much stronger, and you can become much more self-reliant through this process. And I also encourage people to engage in the local community, in the local elections, run for the school board. You can protect the children at the local school. You can protect your neighbors. You can help. I volunteer on a local community water company, because water supply is extremely important. You know, so do something locally. It's much more rewarding and much more productive. And frankly, all of this will come down to us defending our own neighborhoods more than anything what's going on in Washington, D.C. They're gone. That swamp is a swamp that will have to kind of, you know, rot itself to whatever it is. Eventually, I hope it will get, you know, paved over or turned into a crocodile sanctuary or something. But
you know. We have to finish now. Thank you for keeping some of your sense of humor. Sasha Latipova, you're amazing. Thank you for being on. This is Dr. Peter Breggin. I want, with my closing words, to say yes, get involved in this movement. Do it. You'll get to talk to amazing people, to meet people. You'll find out that down the block, perhaps there's another person that feels exactly like you do about most of these things. Many, many people are coming to think this way. There is almost a joy at times in being together, facing this. Thank you very much for taking these things seriously.